Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
I'm Adam Biscoe. I'm the head of educational oversight at the QAA. It's been a very interesting discussion today. I'd just like to start off by saying that there are two planks to the government's Tier 4 policy. The first of those is to address the abuse of student immigration, the student immigration route. But the second plank of that policy is to drive up the quality of UK higher education, and that's where UKBA, QAA comes into the picture. Second thing I'd like to say, and sort of echoing what Paul Marshall said earlier, is that transnational education is increasing throughout the world. More and more students are choosing to travel for their higher education. But what is important to remember is that it's increasingly competitive, that many countries, and I think Christina noted this, that the Chinese and Malaysians and Singaporeans and Indians are expecting to become major exporters of transnational education in the future. So this idea that can we maintain our position, we can't just maintain our position, we've got to run faster and do better to get there. I'd also like to just draw your attention back to a point that Christina made earlier, that 73% of students, their reason for choosing the UK as their destination for their higher education, and this is a major commitment by these students, is because of the quality, the reputation of quality of UKHE. So we can't just stand still, we need to try harder at the end of the day with regard to the higher education that is available. Just three things I want to talk about. One is what's the role for QAA in driving up quality of UK higher education? We only have a very small part. It's actually the providers who drive up the quality of higher education. We merely report upon it. We're not driving it as such. Secondly, just to say how we're engaging with the private sector or the for-profit providers of higher education in the UK. So I'll just outline a bit about what we're doing there. And also to say something about the early conclusions that we're beginning to see from the work that we've done so far. Okay. Okay. By way of sort of introduction, that the QAA's mission and strategic aims, the mission of the UK is to safeguard the standards and improve the quality of UK higher education. We work across the four parts of the UK, the four constituent parts, more or less in the same way. Our focus is always the same on the management of academic standards, the management of the quality of learning opportunities, and the reliance that can be placed in the published information that providers make available. But we also, and this is kind of important, I think, in terms of what international students see, is that we undertake overseas audits of UK provision in countries. And Paul, again, he mentioned the report coming out of the Malaysian overseas audit in 2010. You would find a very similar picture if you read if it's not already out, the forthcoming report on Singapore, the one on China in 2007, in Russia and India, that UKHE is very good at networking, very good at establishing collaborative links with overseas providers and delivering UKHE to tens of thousands of students on an annual basis. So I would agree with those figures from Tony Mills that this is a major export of the UK, and it's something that we need to work hard to protect. This year, we're going to China again because it is such an important market. There are 70 UK HEIs involved in the collaborative provision in China, with hundreds of different programs being delivered over there to tens of thousands of students. So it's a very important part of the work we do. What QAA does is that we publish reports on UKHE institutions, whether it be UKHEIs or in further education colleges and their management of standards and quality. And in the last year, obviously, we've become a designated body in terms of UKBA's definition for private providers in terms of educational oversight. One thing I should also mention is that we are the custodian, if you like, of key reference points, which are applicable certainly to UK HEIs and increasingly so to many for-profit providers. These are things like the Framework for Higher Education Qualifications, the Code of Practice, and subject benchmark statements, which, as I say, for UK HEIs, are absolutely crucial for defining the standards and the quality of higher education. These reference points, as we call them, they're all contained in the quality code, are seen as a model in many parts of the world as the way that quality assurance in higher education should be undertaken. While we're the custodian of them, we don't write them, we get people from the sector to write them, and they're very much based upon best practice within the sector, particularly the code of practice. So we have an international reputation for what we do, and we know that our reports are widely read, disappointingly perhaps, more widely read abroad than they are by UK students. But importantly, when we undertake overseas audits, that we also work with the governments in the countries concerned of the audit. They're not involved in our reviews, they don't in any way influence them, but they always are welcoming and supportive of what we do and would like us to do more of these reviews, and that's part of the reason why we're back to China within a small period of 5 years. So in March, when the Home Secretary announced the changes to Tier 4, the educational oversight requirement was introduced for highly trusted sponsor status. It's not the only requirement, but it's an important part of that. QAA, along with six other designated bodies, were recognised as organisations that could provide educational oversight. What were we asked to do? Well, I'm not quite sure we were asked to do what we were asked to do, but what we agreed to do is that we do what we do, actually. We have not changed anything for private providers or we haven't really changed anything. And I think, as one of our colleagues here noted, that it should feel pretty much the same for a provider, whether you're in a private institution or a public institution. So what is it that we do? We visit the provider always. We meet with students. We have a confidential meeting with students. Students are invited to send in a submission, which can or cannot be confidential if they so choose. And we publish a report with judgments on the management of standards, the management of the quality of learning opportunities, those things which enable students to achieve the awards that they're studying for. These are not things like accommodation or car parking or things like that. And also we make a conclusion on the reliance that can be placed in the published information that a provider makes available. This is pretty much what we do. Well, it is what we do in public HEIs and in further education colleges. So it's very much the same process. It's based largely on the method that the Integrated Quality Enhancement Review, there's a mouthful, process that we've been applying in further education colleges for the last 5 years. What is this? What are the aims of the reviews for educational oversight? And there are three types of reviews, which I'll briefly explain in a moment. Firstly, and most importantly, is to provide information that's useful to applicants and to students, but also to their parents. There's no doubt that parents are an increasingly important part, both for UK students, but also for overseas students. We hope that our reports are contributing to the enhancement of UKHE. We publish overview reports of what it is that we've found in different sectors or in different periods with regard to good practice that we've seen and areas that we think can be improved. And we promote partnership working between providers, awarding bodies and organisations and students. Our aim is that we're all in this together, if you like, and it's very important that we work together on the process. Okay, key features of educational oversight then. It's adapted from, the main method is called Review for Educational Oversight, and it's adapted, as I said earlier, from IQER, which is operated in further education colleges. All the information about what we do and all the handbooks and such like are published on our website. Colleges are invited to a briefing, and it's a peer review process. And it's very important to remember, we're very sensitive about the concept of peer review. It's not an inspectorate, as you might be familiar with the likes of Ofsted. All the people that undertake our reviews are people who are active practitioners in higher education. And for the purposes of these reviews, of the for-profits that we've been doing this year, while we've been reliant to a large extent on existing reviewers, we've also recruited 50 new reviewers from private higher education colleges, partly to renew our pool, but also so as we get a better understanding of how for private organisations work. There's providers are invited to send in self-evaluation in advance, basically setting out their evaluation of their management of standards and quality, and that's a key starting point for a review team. A review team consists of a review coordinator and two or three reviewers, depending on the size, the number of students, and the programme size. There's, as I mentioned earlier, there's a confidential meeting with students. There's a meetings with at least one meeting with staff, and it leads to judgments. And all our reports, all thousands of them, if you wish to trawl them, are published on our website. And so far, we've published 20 from the reviews from educational oversight. But we're obviously beginning to pick up the pace in that. This is where we are at the moment. When we first started to think about this last summer, about this time last summer, we estimated there would be about 400 colleges out there who may potentially apply. And I think Jeremy Oppenheim said earlier today that about 170 of them didn't in the end apply. That would tie in roughly with our figures. But we had no real concrete idea as to how many colleges could potentially apply. In the end, we got about 250 applications. And we divided those into three different types. Firstly, those foreign providers and study abroad providers, which we put those under a scheme called the Recognition Scheme for Educational Oversight. And these are organisations whose standards are set outside the UK. They're largely American, but there are some also from Malaysia and Pakistan and from Cyprus. There are three embedded college reviews going on. These are organisations which have links with HEIs, and they actually are providing an alternative route into HEI. These are the likes of Study Group, Navitas, and Kaplan. And those three reviews are in progress. And then the bulk of the work, the bulk of the applications came from for-profit providers, of which there are 230, of which we've undertaken 75 of the reviews so far. And we will be completing all of these reviews by the end of 2012, or in time for colleges to acquire the HTS status, if that's the positive outcome. Most of these providers are offering programs not on the Framework for Higher Education Qualifications, but on the Qualifications and Curriculum Framework. Of about the 230 who applied, we still have about 197 at the last count in the system. A number of them have changed their business model in one way or another. Some have decided to move out of the HE market and focus on further education, and therefore they've moved over to the Independent Schools Inspectorate for the purposes of educational oversight. A number of them have gone out of business one way or another, or decided that they just don't want to come forward for educational oversight at this point, and therefore they've disengaged from QAA. That's not to say that they won't come back in the future. What are our emerging or early conclusions? Firstly, quality of the reviewers we've got have been very good, actually, from the for-profit sector. Some of the reviewers I think we've had from further education colleges in the past have not always been overly committed, I suppose, to doing this on top of their day job, which is often very intensive. So we've had very positive experience of the reviewers that we've recruited. Of the international students we've met, and I met quite a lot of them at the briefing sessions that we undertook for colleges, we shouldn't forget that these students are already paying full fees. We often, I think, in this country have this model, this view of international students that they're quite placid and that they're willing to go along with a very didactic model. A lot of these students are already paying full fees, and that's very, very much influenced the way that they are thinking about their higher education. And they're quite demanding as a consequence. And they're also very thoughtful about the ways in which they can involve with QAA and what they expect from their provider. In terms of the review schedule, then, as I said, the bulk of the reviews, there's 230 of those applied to us. 30 or so have dropped out of the process for one reason or another with us. Of the ones that we've reviewed so far, about 90% are getting positive outcomes. We wonder if that will continue at that rate because I think there's been some game playing perhaps by some colleges who think that they'll try and go at the end of the schedule and they'll get things better in time for the time we turn up or the review teams turn up. So although it's early days in our work in terms of the reports that we've published, we believe that it's having a positive impact. If you think that we started out with a potential of 400 colleges and we're probably going to end up around about the 200 mark, that's not a positive outcome in that sense, but we're probably going to end up with the cream of the crop, and that's our experience to date is that with 90% getting through on their first review with QA, that seems to be a positive outcome. And I shall stop there and take any questions that you may have. Any questions? Yes, Beatrice.
I slightly hesitate to ask this, but and do feel free to bat it back as too political. But it seemed to me that the transition from the former accreditation arrangements to the current education oversight ones have the potential to leave a gap in that the old accreditation arrangements looked at issues like student welfare, premises, structural issues. Mm-hmm. Are you left with any sense that those are now neglected, or do you feel that they didn't need to be looked at because these colleges are the good colleges and they just deal with that?
What QAA focuses on is what we know about, which is the quality of higher education and the management of academic standards, and that's why we employ contract with peer reviewers to do that. We have no experience of looking at premises, at student accommodation and things like that. And as I understand it, and that's UKBA is looking at that in terms of the actual HGS side of things. So it's not where we have any expertise and not somewhere where we would want to go for that very reason. Whether it's important, that's for UKBA to determine, I think, and for them to pick up. We, in a similar way, we don't monitor or look at reports about attendance and monitoring and things like that. Is that a non-political answer or a sufficiently non-political?
I mean, I think, obviously not in any way a criticism of QAA, but it seems to me that the UKBA are not the body one would look for expertise on student welfare. Don't feel obliged to respond to that. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? No? Okay, good. Thank you very much then.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.